This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Jason Brown got a full scholarship to play football at UNC Chapel Hill, got drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, and later played for the St. Louis Rams, spent seven seasons in the NFL. But in 2012, he left football for a different kind of field. He started a farm. He and his family bought 1,000 acres of land in Franklin County, where they raise crops to feed the hungry. So why did he walk away from millions of dollars in NFL pay to move on to a farm? Jason Brown is the owner of First Fruits Farm in Lewisburg, North Carolina, and joins us now. Jason, welcome.
Glad to be here.
We are going to answer that question, but I'd like you to take us back to your start. You grew up in Henderson, North Carolina, right?
Yes, right up the road, Henderson, North Carolina. Born and raised, born in Mariah Parham Hospital, and got there, you know, in kind of in a unique manner because my parents, they're from North Carolina. They both grew up on farms, but the first chance they got when they became of age, like a lot of people did, they ran away from those farms, and they went up to Washington, D.C. But, you know, my mother, she said, look, the city life is getting a little bit rough up here. We've got to get our children, you know, back to a quieter place, back to a place that's better to raise a family. And so that's how I got back to North Carolina.
So what did they do when they came back?
So now both my parents, entrepreneurs. My mother, she started out in real estate. My father, he's a landscape architect. And so he had a very good job, chief of the landscape department there in Washington, D.C. And, you know, he could not leave his job. I didn't understand that at the time. They wouldn't allow him to have retirement and leave a little bit early. And so he commuted every two weeks, you know, from my childhood all the way until I was 16 years old. But yet he still had his government job. And he also had his own job, you know, Brown's Landscape and Design on the side. And so my older brother in the summertime, we would leave North Carolina, go up to the big city and help my father, you know, mow lawns, plant shrubs, trees. And even though it was the hardest work in the world, I was just thankful because I was able to spend some extra quality time with Dad.
And what about the big city and comparing that to life in Henderson? What was it like for you growing up there? Did you want to move to the big city too?
No, I've never been a big city guy. Never want to be a big city guy. I've just never had the urge or the feeling to, you know, to move to the hustle and bustle. It's too much for me.
All right, we'll talk about football. When did you start playing football?
So now I didn't start playing football until middle school. I played my eighth grade year, and it was all good. It was fun. I mean, I love playing ball, and because I was one of the biggest guys out there. Yeah. All right, so it really wasn't too much of an effort. But now my freshman year in high school, I quit the football team. Mm-hmm. All right, a lot of people don't know I quit football because I said, you know what, I'm going to focus on academics, and not only that, I'm going to be in the marching band, all right, because I love to play the trombone. That was my passion. And so my high school coach, he saw me in the hallway, and he said, boy, you're the biggest kid in this school. He said, look, I need you on my team. And I was like, look, coach, that's really not my passion. I'm a nerd, okay? Look, I just want to focus on my academics. I want to, you know, do what I got to do here so I can go into college. And then he said the magic words. He said, Jason, don't you know that you can earn a scholarship playing football? And I said, oh, really? Like, oh you can? Like, this was something new to me. All right? I didn't know that you could earn a scholarship. And so my parents, I heard them, you know, have a few heated discussions about my older brother and sister about how expensive, you know, college, you know, and paying their tuition was. And I said to myself, if there's anything that I can do, if there's any way that when I go to college, I can help take that pressure off of my parents, I'm going to do it. So when my high school coach, Randy Long, came to me with that opportunity, I said, you know what? I've got to grow up and be a man real quick. I've got to do this for my family. And so football, it really wasn't a decision of passion. It was more so of a business decision.
Wow. And it paid off. You got the scholarship.
I did. And you know what? I told my coach, I said, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do it. But because I knew that he was going to be that catalyst to help get me to that next level. And if he told me to bust down a brick wall, I was going to do it. And sure enough, he called that that special day. I remember it was spring of my junior year of 2000. And we were about to go out to a track meet, and he wouldn't let me get on the bus. It was raining outside, and he said, "Stop." And I said, "Coach, it's raining on me right now. Look, I need to get on the bus." He said, "No, stand out there in the rain because I want you to remember this day for the rest of your life." I said, "Well, go ahead, Coach. Tell me, what is it? What do you want me to remember?" He said, "I just got off the phone with Coach Ken Browning at North Carolina, and they want to offer you a full scholarship, a full ride." And sure enough, yes, I still remember that day. Just, I mean, so clear. And I'm thankful. And I was so fortunate that Carolina had enough confidence in me, you know, to offer me a scholarship.
Wow. How long did you stand in the rain after that?
Oh, I jumped on the bus, you know, real quick. I was pretty excited.
That's great. So, yeah, and were you playing interior line? Because I know in your pro career, you were an interior lineman.
Yes.
At college as well?
So now, starting at Carolina, you know, they mixed things up a little bit. They actually moved me out to the tackle position, which is very, very odd because of my height, mm-hmm. Okay? I'm a little bit shy of 6'3". Actually, technically at the combine, they measured me at 6'2¾". All right? So now, that's pretty short for an exterior offensive lineman. They really want the centers to be about 6'3", 6'4". Guards, at least 6'5". When you're a tackle, they want you to have long arms, long legs. They want you to be at least 6'6", almost 6'7". And so I was shorty out there, okay?
Shit, 6'3",
yeah,
you're shorty.
Actually, a lot of my teammates, they picked on me, and they called me shorty. And I'm like, look, everyone else thinks that 6'2" is a decent height, but, you know, not for an exterior offensive lineman.
Well, if you can knock them down, you don't have to reach out and push them down.
So I had to overcompensate with aggressiveness.
Yeah. But it's and you talked about the combine. That's this kind of giant cattle call for the NFL, right? A lot of players show up and then all the scouts show up. So this is one big place where you all aggregate. And that's what you mentioned, the combine. What was your career like? How was it like? What was it like at Carolina? How'd you like going there and playing football?
Wow. The most awesome university, all right, in all the land. I'm a Tar Heel born, Tar Heel bred, and yes, when I die, I'm a Tar Heel dead, okay? All right, so rah-rah Carolina Lana, rah-rah Carolina Lana, and then you can fill in the blanks with, State, Duke, all those other subpar universities. You know what? You can fill in the blanks. They can go somewhere, all right? But I love Carolina, and so in choosing a university, I said to myself, they have to have a great balance between academics, athletics, and social life. And as soon as I stepped foot on the Carolina's campus, it was a no-brainer. They had the trifecta in all of those things. When I shook Coach Bunting's hand, John Bunting, I felt the electricity come off of him with the confidence in that, Jason, look, this is a special place. I'm going to be the leader that's going to help you to get to that next level. And as well as all of my brothers at Carolina, I met my wife, all right, my wife of 15 years while I was at Carolina. Now, I met her while I was at Carolina, but she is a Duke grad. Okay,
my goodness, how did you even?
Yeah, so that's the tobacco road. I did.
But she condescended to marry you anyway.
Yes. So I saw the grass and that it was greener on the other side. All right. And I said, you know what? I love Carolina girls, but you know what? Let me see what Duke has to offer. And sure enough, it was fate. Because we were not supposed to actually meet where we were. We were at a party, all right? Mm-hmm. And I say party in a politically correct way. We were actually at a club, okay, at a nightclub. And I wasn't supposed to be out. She wasn't supposed to be out. And we both stuck out like sore thumbs.
Because you were kind of nerds, right? I mean,
I'm a nerd. I'm not a going out type of guy. Yeah. But my friends pulled me out. Yeah, so I succumbed to peer pressure. Her friends pulled her out at the same time. And so we're both sitting there like, we don't want to be here, all right? And so we both went into the back to the quietest place that we can find over all of the, you know, the barreling music. And we just had the most awesome conversation. And it started from there.
and you married her, and all that is great. You go on to have an NFL. But let me ask you, before we get to the NFL, you said it was a business decision to go to continue playing football to get the scholarship. So I'm thinking, if football's not your passion, you're not imagining a career in the NFL at this point, or were you once you got to college?
I was not imagining a career in the NFL. So my goal was to, of course, you know, get my education. All right. And move on from there. I knew that I wanted to motivate and inspire people. To use my vocal abilities, you know, that I'm doing right now. And so I chose a degree in interpersonal communications. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to motivate and inspire our youth. I'm going to just encourage them. I'm going to minister, you know, to our youth. And here's the thing. My college coach came up to me and he sowed another seed and he said, Jason, I don't know if you've thought about the next level, but I've coached several players that have played in the NFL and I want to let you know that you have what it takes. And if you do everything that I tell you to do over these next few years, okay, when you graduate from UNC Chapel Hill, the NFL will come a calling. And I said, really, coach? Like, you think, I mean, because, you know, I didn't grow up watching a lot of football. I didn't grow up watching, you know, all of the greats. And for me, it was just, I said to myself, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and following my parents' footsteps. I'm going to work hard. I'm possibly going to take over the family business and do landscape architecture. All right.
None of that happened. And we'll tell you why when I continue my conversation with Jason Brown. He is now the owner of First Fruits Farm in Lewisburg, North Carolina. That by way of professional football. We'll get to all of it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Jason Brown played in the NFL for 7 seasons before deciding to become a farmer in North Carolina. Now he donates all of his crops to help feed the community. We're talking about his time leading up to that transition. We have you at UNC. You thought that you'd just go there to get an education. You got a full ride, a full scholarship to play football. And then a coach tells you, you know, you can make it at the next level. At this point, I understand, you start getting a little bit full of yourself. Is that true?
Yeah. It was even before I got to Carolina that there was a little bit of ego and pride, you know, taking place. And my older brother, Lunsford Bernard Brown, the second after my father, he pulled me aside and he said, Jason, look, we're all proud of you. All right. But you need to take some humility in your high position. You need to eat yourself a big piece of humble pie. And I said, yeah, whatever, big brother. All right. Like, I earned this. OK, now I'm going to enjoy this to the fullest. And he said, no, look, Jason, you really need to humble yourself. He said, and if you don't humble yourself, then I'll do it for you because I'm your big brother and I'm always going to be bigger. I'm always going to be faster than you and I'm always going to be stronger than you. And so him being 7 years older than I was tired of all the butt whoopings that he had given me since my youth. And I said, well, you know what, big brother, we're going to have to put that to the test. And this was on a Sunday afternoon. We both had on our Sunday's best. And I challenged him to a foot race because I figured that was the best thing, my best odds at beating him at something at the time. And after that race, it wasn't even close. Big brother beat little brother by a country mile. And while I'm over there huffing and puffing and licking my wounds, he came over to me and he said, you see, Jason, all right, you really do need to humble yourself. And in that moment, instead of doing so, I poked a jab at Lunsford because, I was upset and jealous, but still, he had gone to college. Really didn't work out for him. He was trying to find himself in life. And I said, I've got a scholarship to play football at UNC Chapel Hill. What are you doing with your life that's so great, right? What are you doing? And for someone that had such, you know, quick-witted comebacks, he didn't say a word. He was speechless. And our middle sister, she witnessed this whole ordeal, and she said, Jason, you need to apologize to Lunsford, all right? Like, that wasn't right. And I said, no, I'm not going to apologize. And he just sat there looking off into space as though I had pricked his heart. And sure enough, a couple of months later, Lunsford is dieting. He is exercising. He is displaying a focus on his life unlike any other that all of us had never seen before. And we're like, Lunsford, like, what is going on? Like, why are you so driven all of a sudden? Why are you so focused? And he said, I finally know what I want to do with my life. I'm going to dedicate my life to service. I'm going to join the United States Army. And we're like, whoa, like out of this guy, like no one saw this coming, right? It was like a complete about face. And he had already had the talk with my parents. And now he's just coming to little brother. And I'm like, look, I'm the most important person. You should have talked this over with me first, right? And I, being that selfish little kid, I tried to change his mind. And I said, Lunsford, you're talented. You're an artist. There's still so many things that you can do. Why are you going to join the Army, all right, and leave us? Why are you going to dedicate your life to service? And he said, Jason, before you can help someone else, you have to first help yourself. And I didn't understand what that meant at the moment, but he said it with such boldness and conviction that I had no rebuttal. And sure enough, he went on to basic training, boot camp, and he graduated. And he was supposed to be stationed in Germany. He graduated. It was September of 9th of 2001. Mm. Okay. And everyone knows what happened 2 days later. We went from a country of peace to a country of war really fast. And so over the next 2 years, he was stationed in Germany for a year and a half before he was called into service in Afghanistan and then Iraq. And meanwhile, yes, little brother, you know, still being selfish, you know, full of ego, pride, making a name for myself at Carolina. And, you know, out of sight, out of mind, I had kind of grown disconnected from older brother. And a couple of years had passed. This was early in my junior year at Carolina. We had just finished up with training camp with a scrimmage, and coach was going to allow us to go out and eat dinner with our parents. And so I'm sitting behind my mother on the passenger side of the car, and I was going to take this opportunity to vent with my mother with everything that's wrong with my life at the time, right? And if there's any shoulder you can get and cry on, it's going to be mama's shoulder. And so I'm like, Mom, look, we had a bad season last year. And you know what? The writing's on the wall. It's going to be a bad season this year as well because all the guys are selfish. They're only thinking about themselves. And yeah, kind of ironic, right? You know, me pointing the finger still at other people. And this goes on for about 10 minutes. And my mother doesn't say a word. And I'm thinking she's up there, like she's asleep. I'm like, Mama, like, what are you going to say? Because usually she's like, oh, baby, you know, everything's going to be all right. You know, you just do your best. You just keep working hard and everything's going to be okay. She didn't say that. All of a sudden, she lashed out at me and she said, you need to shut up. You need to shut up. And I didn't see this coming. She said, nothing of what you're going through in your life right now can compare to what your older brother is going through, fighting and serving our country in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's all she said. But literally, if there was any hot air that I had in my balloon, it deflated like real quick, like it all deflated. And here's what it did. It exposed me for who I was and what I was. Like you daggone right. I should have eaten that big piece of humble pie a long time ago.
Did it take you back to that moment? Because your brother, in his epiphany, notices that he can't help himself until he starts helping other people. In other words, the source of actual joy is in getting out of your own head and helping other people, and that's how I can help myself. That's his message to you at that moment. And I take it that you didn't take it on board in that moment. That
was of course not. Then.
Did that quote come back to you in that moment? Or I'm just curious to know what was going through your mind. You talked about being deflated, certainly. Mom is not taking your side on this, and she you know, you thought for sure she would. But I wonder if any of your conversations with Lunsford had come back.
Yeah, it didn't fully come back, but what it did was it not only exposed me, but there was such a conviction. Whereas in, I said, Jason, how can you be so disconnected from the world? How can you be so egocentric where you're only thinking about yourself, but yet there's someone that you know, there's someone that you love, your very own brother, that's going through something far worse than you could ever imagine. And yet, how can you still complain about this is football, all right? Like when Allen Iverson said, hey, you know, this is basketball, right? You know, we're talking about practice. Like, this is practice. You act like this is a championship game. Well, for me, this is football, all right? I know I'm working hard. I know there's a lot that goes into the program and winning games, but yet in the greater scheme of life, there's a lot going on in the world that we sometimes turn a blind eye to. And that's exactly what I had done. And so for me, I said, you know what? Never again am I going to complain.
Talk about your career in the NFL. I want to come back to this story and how things changed for you. But I want to know about what happens after Carolina and get a little more of that story. Where do you go next? Because you did play pro ball.
Yes. And so I was drafted in the fourth round in 2005 by the Baltimore Ravens. And that was a little bit of a faith story as well, because one of my good friends at Carolina, one of my spiritual brothers, Ronald Brewer, he said, Jason, what are you praying for? He was like, all the different teams out here, like you can go to any team. He said, what are you praying for? And I said, you know what? I'm not praying to go to a specific team. He said, but what team do you want to go to? And I said, man, I would love to be drafted by the Carolina Panthers. He was like, well, guess what? That's what you should pray for, because, you know, the Bible says, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And I said, you know what? Do I truly know what's best for me? I said, do I truly know the desires of my heart? I said, I'm going to pray that God's will be done. And I'm going to trust in him that he's going to send me to the best place that I can be. And sure enough, Carolina, they were looking for a lineman in the third round. Mel Kiper, the draft guru, he had predicted that, oh, Jason Brown, he's a first-day guy. Of course, he's going to be drafted at least by the third round. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it is going to be Carolina. And they pass me up. And now we go into the second day, and I'm like, all right, God, I'm trusting in you. But you know what? All of these draft gurus, everyone said that I was going to be a highly drafted guy. I'm like, what's going on? And then sure enough, half throughout the second day, I get a phone call from Ozzie Newsome, general manager for the Baltimore Ravens. And he said, Jason, we're going to draft you. How would you like to be a Raven? And I said, I'm ecstatic. I said, I'm going to come there and I'm going to give you my all. Yeah. And here's what little I didn't know, that being drafted by Baltimore in the fourth round was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because I talked to my agent and I said, okay, I want you to, even though I was drafted a little bit later, I want you to lock me in to a long-term deal like the first day guys that are drafted. And he said, no, Jason. He said, that's not what you want. I said, yeah, but they're only going to give me a $300,000 sign-in bonus. I want $400,000. He said, no, Jason, no, you don't want the extra money right now. He said, look, all of those first day guys that were drafted ahead of you, they're locking them into 4, 5, 6 year deals. Baltimore, they only want to offer you a 3 year deal. He said, guess what? I know your abilities. Yeah. I know how talented you are. I know that you're going to outplay that contract. And guess what? They're going to regret that they never gave
it's
you a long
contract. It's kind of a gamble the way it works in the NFL, and we don't have to get too geeky about it. But the fact is, if you can prove yourself after 3 years, because first year you're just learning the game, and then you're kind of scrambling around. By year three, you've matured, and all of a sudden you're worth a whole lot of money, and you're a free agent, and you're on the market at that point. If they'd locked you into a five-year deal, you're stuck with that. Otherwise, you're on the market.
So he's betting
on that. How was it like for you? I mean, did you start to love the game? I mean, you were sort of ambivalent about it at first, certainly in high school. You start to love the game a little more in college. What was it like for you as a player who, again, had never really thought about this or had not as a young man? Was playing for you? Did things change for you in terms of your attitude toward the game and other things that you were doing out your own life? Did you feel like a football player and this was now your career?
Well, the thing is, I was always trying to find myself when I was at Baltimore. The difficult family decision that was made is that I graduated from Carolina, and I'm moving on to my football career. My wife, Tay, because we were married at an early age. We were married my junior year at Carolina, right before I found out that my older brother, that we lost him, to the war in Iraq. And so that shook my world, but yet at the same time, I had a wife and I was building a family that I could go back home to. Now, here's another tough decision that was made is that my wife was graduating from Duke about the same time, and she had aspirations of being a doctor, a dentist. And so she started Carolina Dental School in 2005, the same year that I was drafted by Baltimore. And here's the tough decision that we made is that we were going to try and make a long distance marriage work, especially after being together and having that foundation, you know, for a few years. And I tell you what, that was extremely hard. Yeah. Extremely hard because I'm a family man. I'm a man of faith. You know, after finishing it and completing a grueling hard day's work or a game, like I need that family structure to be able to come home to. And you know what? I didn't have that. And yeah, I'm selfishly thinking about that right now. But you know what? My wife, she was going through a hard time as well. She didn't have a husband to come home and fall back on. And so looking back at that now, wow, I'm like, did we make the best decision for our family? And that's tough.
Add to that the fact that you just mentioned, which was that your brother, who you felt so close to and who had been an important part of your story all the way through,
yes,
was killed in Iraq. What impact did that have on you? Where were you in your career when you heard that, and what effect did that have on you?
Yeah, so that was a month. That was literally less than a month after my mother gave me that tongue lashing.
Mm-hmm.
Where my parents, they received the dreadful knock at the door. That they were suited and booted to inform them that Lunsford was, he was just slain in service. And that rocked my world. My foundation was gone. It pulled the rug from underneath me. That there, I can't think of any more cliches, you know, to share with you that I fell and I hit rock bottom. All right. Because I didn't know if I wanted to continue playing football anymore.
How many years had you been playing by then?
That was my third year at Carolina. Okay. I didn't know if I wanted to continue going to school anymore.
Yeah.
Because my reality is saying, what is real and what isn't? I mean, if you can't hold on to and keep those loved ones that you hold so dear, it's like what am I working for then? If life is just going to throw you a curveball like this. And so it is such a harsh fact of life that
you did continue, though. Forgive me for interrupting, because
you
did continue. And I wonder what caused you to make that choice to continue playing football and then go on to the NFL.
So it's a harsh fact of life that we're all going to lose loved ones.
Yeah.
And the longer we live, we're going to lose even more loved ones. And so the thing is, I said, you know, I cannot sit here and continue to wallow in my pity and self-doubt. What can I do to move forward to honor Lunsford's legacy, you know, to honor his memory? And I said, you know what? I've got to be the best person that I can be. I've got to be the best husband I can be. I've got to be the best football player that I can be. And so here's the thing. For that previous month, I was going out after my mother, you know, challenged me. I was going out and I was kicking butt and taking names. And now all of a sudden, wow, like I was on a warpath. All right. And here's what gave me the constant reminder is that, so Lunsford, he was slain by a mortar attack. It's a mortar explosion and a piece of shrapnel. All right. It pierced through his dog tag exactly where his heart was. And Lunsford's wife gave me that torn dog tag. All right. That was pierced all the way through it. And here's what I did as a reminder. I wore Lunsford's dog tag, pointy edge turned in right over my heart, so that after I put on my tight shoulder pads and after I put on my tight jersey, I could feel it literally piercing a hole right there in my chest. And nobody knew that it was there except for me. And I went out to every practice and to every game with that thorn in my side, literally as a constant reminder to never make excuses, to never quit, to never give up. And when everyone it could have been one of those dog days at practice where it's 100% humidity, 95 degrees outside, and everybody's complaining. And I'm like, come on, guys, let's get it done. And I'm like, Jason, like, are you immune from everything around us? Like, you don't feel the same thing that we're feeling? And the thing is that I had that thorn that felt that much sharper than whatever other pain was going on around me. And so that's what propelled me to push harder, to give that extra push every step of the way.
Do you think you would have made it to the NFL? Was that the extra that put you over the top, or were you headed to the NFL by that point anyway, do you think?
The thing is, everyone draws motivation and inspiration from different areas and different sources of their life. The thing, like I said, is that I never had that dream of being in the NFL. I never truly had that passion. But from that point forward, I said, you know what? I'm on a warpath. All right. Like for the first time, I was playing on a mission. Okay. And I said to myself, you know what? I can play football. I can be the best father I can be. I can try and be the best person that I can be, all right, by drawing from this source of inspiration.
Well, we're going to talk about, we're listening to how memories of your brother Lunsford drove you and inspired you to play football. A little later on in our conversation, we'll find out how those memories drove you out of football when we continue our conversation with Jason Brown. He's the owner of First Fruits Farm in Lewisburg, North Carolina, and our conversation continues on the state of things in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio talking to Jason Brown today, the owner of First Fruits Farm in Lewisburg, North Carolina. Came to that farm from a football field, walked away from millions of dollars, and now he donates food and works as a farmer. So let's talk about this, because you talked about your brother being lost in the Iraq War, getting that message. You were in college at the time. So years had passed. You get into the NFL. He was 27 when he died. Tell us about your 27th birthday.
So I woke up that morning, and of course I should have been happy because it's my birthday, all right? But yet I walked into the bathroom, looked in the mirror, wiping the crust from my eyes, and I didn't like what I saw, because I instantly started making comparisons, and I started comparing my life and everything I had accomplished over 27 years with Lunsford's life and everything that he had accomplished. And to tell you the truth, there was no comparison, all right? He wore a size 14 shoe. I wear a size 16 shoe, and I couldn't wear his shoes. I couldn't even walk a mile in his shoes. But because, so many youth, they would tell me then and even now that, oh, Jason, like, you're doing such great things. Like, you're my hero, right? And I'm like, hold on a second, kid. Like, I can't take that honor of being someone's hero, because my older brother, that's a hero, all right? Jesus, he said, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. I know someone who did that. All right. My older brother, he laid down his life. And so with my football career, and even with what we're doing right now on the farm, at no extent am I laying my life on the line or dodging bullets, blood, sweat, and tears. So that helps me to put things in context. But here's the kicker, is that I looked in the mirror, and a lot of people say that Lunsford and I, we look alike, especially when we smile. And I saw his reflection looking right back at me, and here's what he said. The same thing that spoiled brat of a kid had said to him so many years earlier. Jason, what are you doing with your life that's so great? What are you doing with your life that's so special right now? Wow. And when I say that hit me to my core, all right, whereas in I was 27 years old, and now I'm going through a midlife crisis. All right. It pierced my heart so much, to the point where now I said, Jason, like, you've had it all wrong. All right. You're out here. You're living this life. Okay. Which you thought was what everyone said you should be doing. Everyone told myself and my wife that, oh, you're a power couple. Like, Tay, you're a dentist. Jason, you're the NFL. Like, you're doing these great big things. And what I'm saying is, how great is the American dream when to achieve it, you're leaving behind all of the Americans, right? And so I'm looking at myself, and I don't like what I see. I'm looking at what I've become, and so far from my country rustic roots, growing up in a small town where they're like, yeah, you get out of here, you're going to forget about us, right, Jason? And you're like, no, I'm not going to forget about you guys. Guess what, man? I forgot. All right, lock, stock, and barrel. I was long gone because we were living this lavish lifestyle in St. Louis in a big mansion, and now the conviction comes. All right. And my heart is now wide open. And here's what happened. All of those seeds that were sown and planted early in my life, especially in the Bible Belt, all right, all of those sermons about what love is, what does love look like, and exactly how to share love with thy fellow neighbor. You know, loving someone else the same way that you love yourself. And like I said before, I was so selfish. You know, my definition of love, it was perverted, all right? And so for the first time in my life, I repented. And I said, God, you know, what can I do, you know, moving forward with all of the gifts, the talents, and the abilities, all of the blessings that you've given me, what would you have me to do more so than anything else, all right? And so now at this time in repentance, okay, I'm standing, you know, in front of a bar, all right, in our mansion there in St. Louis, and I'm not a drinking guy, all right. I don't drink, but yet, if you have two bars in your home, the cool thing to do is to stock it with top shelf alcohol, okay. And here's what the Holy Spirit came to me and said in my prayer. The Holy Spirit said, "Pour it all down the drain," and I'm like, God, I was like, what does that mean? Like, what are you talking about? And again, pour it all down the drain, like as clear as day, as though someone was just speaking into the microphone over loudspeakers. I could hear it. And I looked up and I saw, you know, all of these false idols in my home. And one after one, I opened up every single bottle. There was even a bottle of this super rare cognac, Louis the 13th. You know, that's like $1,500. I opened up every single one and started pouring them down the drain. And so when I got into work, you know, the next day, I'm sharing with my locker mate that's next beside me. And I said, dude, I had this awesome encounter with God. I said, I submitted myself, you know, to Christ. And I'm talking about full submission. I did exactly what he told me to do. He's like, well, what are you? Hold on a second. Pause, Jason. What are you talking about? I said, I poured it all down the drain, everything in my bar. And he was like, you mean that big bar you have in your house, Jason, with all of those unopened bottles and stuff? You poured all of that down the drain? I said, yeah, man. That's what he told me to do, so I did it. He was like, well, look, next time, you know, God tells you to pour something down the drain, look, just call me up first. I'll help you out, okay? I'll take those things off your hand. I said, see? I said, look, he didn't say give them away. He said pour it all down the drain.
Just helping to get right with the Lord.
Yeah. And so the thing is, it's like it's one of those crazy encounters. And that was my first act of obedience, my first act of obedience. And even though it was weird. It was strange. It was crazy because I'm looking for, you know, the first thing to do that he's going to, you know, direct me on the right path. And he was like, guess what? You got to clean house first.
Yeah. Well, see, right? Materially, it doesn't change the world by dumping good whiskey down the drain, but it changes you because you actually did something you didn't think you could
do. It changes my heart. It
changes your heart. And so what next now? Now you're on a path.
So now next. Now it's the family, because our definition of focusing on the family and our definition of doing what's best for our family was really a worldly definition. And so, it saddens me to say it, but we were so focused on career and thinking that we were doing best by providing for our family by living in a big house and buying our children whatever they wanted. Guess what? I would leave home in the morning to go to practice about 6:30, and I wouldn't get back home till about 6 o'clock in the evening some days. My wife, she was working full-time dentistry. You know what? Because that's what the world said that you should do. If you have these skills, if you have these things, then yeah. And guess what? We would drop our children off at daycare at 7 o'clock in the morning. We wouldn't pick them back up until 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. And And so the greatest gift that God had given us and our children, the greatest gift from, you know, that came from our marriage, we were being bad stewards, you know, with that gift. And so I told my wife, I said, "Dear, I think we have it all wrong." I said, we have to get back to faith and family first. I said, we have to get back to faith and family. And I said, never again are we going to make decisions for our family based on the almighty dollar. All right. We've served money and we've served, you know, the almighty dollar long enough. And I don't care if it says, and God, we trust on it. Okay. Like we weren't, you know, we were serving money.
Well, tell me about the decision then. So this is all opening up for you, and your values are starting to change, and you're starting to get a new heart through this repentance. When does the vision of the farm come to you?
So the first visions on the farm is that, I first began to learn how to pray, all right, because my prayer life, it was literally non-existent. I began, you know, getting into my Bible and in the scriptures. I began, you know, fasting, you know, for the first time in my life. And so literally I was going through an individual revival. All right. It was like, hey, I'm building a relationship, you know, with God for the first time. I'm getting to know and having an intimate relationship with Jesus Christ. And here's the thing is that in my dreams and my revelations, he kept sharing with me and directing me back towards the story of Joseph in Genesis, and that there was going to be a famine in the land. And how God used Joseph to help prepare the Pharaoh and Egypt for that upcoming famine. And I'm like, God, why do you keep sharing with me that there's going to be a famine in the land? And then he starts to give me a spirit of preparation, you know, for it, and that I should prepare for it. And here's the first thing that I did. I said, well, okay, God. So I went to Sam's Club and I bought up all these canned goods and I stocked our pantry at home. I said, okay, myself and my family, we're ready for, you know, for any type of famine. You know, we're going to be fed. And he said, Jason, I haven't been blessing you all this time so that my blessings can stop at you. I've been blessing you so that my blessings can flow through you. And so when everyone reads the 23rd Psalm, and they love the part where it talks about our cup runneth over, right? But here's what I did, because for some men and women, most people, it's never enough. When our cup starts to run over, I say, hold on a second, and I run and get a bowl. And when that bowl fills up and starts to run over, wait a second, God, hold on a second. And then you run and get a bucket or a barrel. And the thing is, I had accumulated all of these worldly things, but yet, you know, how much is enough? And so I said, you know what? I can start to redirect my life so that the blessings that you have given me, they can help other people. And that's what truly loving thy neighbor looks like. And so I said, all right, God, I see that you want me to do this, all right? And you want me to prepare for this crisis and for this food famine. I said, so now I'm starting to connect the dots, and I see where all food comes from, and all food comes from farms. And I'm like, really, God? And God's like, yeah, Jason, like, yeah, you see where I'm directing you. And the thing is, it's so crazy because I'm like, that's what you want me to do? Like, you want me to give up football and you want me to be a farmer? Like, that's what you want me to do? Because my idea for what I wanted for my life was completely different. And that's where the humility and the sacrifice came.
Now, it's one thing for you, and you're in conversation with God saying the whole thing is crazy. What happens to your wife when you're not exactly God saying, we're leaving St. Louis and the mansion, and we're going to buy a farm?
So here's the thing. I'm having these conversations with God, and these conversations are so crazy that I don't share them with anyone. I didn't share these conversations with my wife, my parents, or my agent, because I'm like, God, everyone is going to think that I'm crazy. Kind of like God telling Noah to build an ark.
Yeah.
Everyone called him a loony bin. Mm-hmm. All right. They said, Noah, you're crazy. It's never rained before. We're like, what are you talking about? What are you preparing for? And I said, God, like, what am I going to tell my wife? And so I kept that for a very long time, all the way up until I was released from the Rams. All right. So that was early 2012. And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, that this is setting us up for an awesome transition where we can just ease on back to North Carolina and I can just start farming naturally without anyone asking questions. But no, my agent calls me up and says, Jason, look, I know you're thinking about giving up football and hanging up your cleats, but guess what? You can't leave because I have three teams that want to sign you to a long-term deal right now.
I want to get past this because I do want to hear about the farm.
Yes.
You turned down three deals even
yes.
though you thought you were at a transition. Tell us about the farm now in Lewisburg.
So the farm is we were looking for land, and my wife and I, we made an awesome covenant with God. We said, God, whatever land you bless us with, we're going to name it First Fruits Farm. And we're going to give your people, we're going to give our community the first fruits of whatever, everything that is produced from that land. And as soon as we made that prayer, that covenant, things started working in the background. Doors started opening, doors started closing. And sure enough, God allowed us to purchase the most beautiful farm in North Carolina, located right in Franklin County, Lewisburg, North Carolina. And the way that it happened, I can't take any credit for the deal and how it took place. It's literally as though God gift wrapped it for us and said, here, Jason.
But you also had to learn to be a farmer.
Yeah, that was after the fact. And that was a lot of faith involved in that as well.
And people came to your aid. At a certain point, they realized that you needed help, and they rushed to your aid in some ways, helped you out a little bit. After
yes.
you, after a little tour of YouTube, which apparently is where you started to learn to farm, and
yes.
folks started to tell you, you know, actually, we're your neighbors, and we'll help you out. And then, and so tell us what you do now and kind of where, how much you give away and where does it go?
So to date, over the past 4 to 5 years, we've donated more than 850,000 pounds of produce to local churches, food banks, food pantries, soup kitchens, you name it. If there's someone in need, all of that produce has gone to help our local communities.
Are you surprised at the way, again, these doors open? It's these crazy propositions. You say yes, and once you say yes, all these doors come wide open and all the help that you thought, I can't do this, and then people are suddenly there giving you all this help.
So literally, it was a field of dreams. So when we were getting ready to start our first crop for harvest, we were naturally led towards sweet potatoes because it's the North Carolina, you yes. know, state vegetable. They're easy to cultivate. Very nutrient dense. They have a long-term shelf life. But yet, I looked at that 5 acres and I said, "Hold on a second, God. It's just me and my family." I said, "And 5 acres can yield more than 100,000 pounds of sweet potatoes. Who is going to help us to harvest, this large crop?" And just like the field of dreams, God said, "Jason, just plant the field. I'll make sure you get all of the help that you need." Now, even before then came another leap of faith because I still knew nothing about farming. Okay. and so I relied on the help from a local farmer, Lynn Wester, where I said, "Lynn, look, I don't know anything out here." I said, "Please help me. I'm trying to plant 5 acres of sweet potatoes." And he said, "Well, you know what? I don't know much about them either, but I have some friends that know everything about sweet potatoes. We can possibly get it done."
They got it done.
Yes.
Jason Brown, the owner of First Fruits Farms in Lewisburg, North Carolina, thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things. By the way, of course, you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org, and see ways that you might get involved as well, stateofthings.org. Our program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley's our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.